I was standing in my kitchen that morning. You did the RT Radio 1 interview. It's just unbelievable.
It's almost like a dream, actually. It's almost like it's not real. Like my business is actually on the west side of Maui, which is where kind of the catastrophe happened. So I had to move, obviously, naturally, when everything was lost, to the other side of the island. I'm living up the mountain, which is absolutely gorgeous because it actually reminds me of Ireland very much. It's really green, mm-hmm. a really temperate climate. So not really what you'd expect from Hawaii, but it is very, very surreal to me driving over to work and driving on the bypass and kind of seeing the devastation on a daily basis. You know, it definitely has it has kind of triggered a lot of stuff with me, emotions. It is very heavy, and still, even when I see it, I just can't seem to affirm with it. I can't seem to really accept it. And I think it will still be like a process, I think, for me for a long time, you know.
Hello, thank you so much for tuning in to The Good Glow today, brought to you with thanks to Yoplait Skier. At Yoplait, quality is their passion, and their commitment to health and nutrition starts with the sourcing of ingredients. Three core values: pleasure, simplicity and joy help Yoplait deliver healthy, delicious and nutritious pots of enjoyment to their customers. So let's talk about Skier, a great nutritious yogurt. Skier is a creamy Icelandic recipe. Like Greek yogurt, it's packed full of protein, fat-free, and Yoplait Skier has only one ingredient, milk. I personally love their big pots, and Skier Natural 850 gram is available across Aldi stores nationwide. Hello and welcome along. I'm so excited to bring this episode to you today. It's been weeks actually in the making as we tried to get a microphone to Peter, who's currently living in the mountains in Hawaii. So lots of you will remember Peter from Exposé. It was such a big deal for TV3 to get Peter home from Hollywood and present the show. So he had been nominated for an Emmy over there. He worked in TMZ. He was such a big deal. So when he came home to Exposé, Peter speaks today about how he wasn't really that happy and his career was short-lived in Ireland on TV. After 2 years, he was let go and he packed up and went to Hawaii with his family. It was a real rock bottom moment for Peter. He started driving for Uber over there. He went to a dark place, but he used mantras and manifesting to help himself every single day. And now he's happy out, has his own business and has found his true path. But then August 8th happened last year and the whole world watched on as the wildfires took over Hawaii's Maui Island. Described as the worst natural disaster that Hawaii has ever faced, the world watched on as Maui burned. Peter, too, who had been traveling in the US and was stuck in an airport while his family were in Hawaii, and all he could do was watch as his whole life burned down. Today, Peter speaks to me about everything that he's been through since then and everything that his community has faced. And I'm so grateful. Peter Reardon, welcome to The Good Glow. I feel like you're such a joy button type of person. Like, I always feel so happy around you. We went on a few junkets together back in the day. And it's so good to see you. Thanks for making the time for me today.
Oh, don't even mention it, Georgie. Absolutely a pleasure of mine to actually catch up with you and have a chat outside of rushing to planes, trains and automobiles, having a few Proseccos en route. It's nice to actually sit down and catch up with you, because you obviously have had a tremendous amount of like amazing things obviously happening to you, obviously some not so amazing. So you've had your own kind of journey as well, which I've been keeping up with, which is nice, you know, with social media and whatnot, that we can kind of tap in and tap out.
You were such like a lovable character on our TV screens, and like your warmth came across, but also how absolutely hilarious you are.
I feel like I didn't get the opportunity for the people of Ireland. Like, I met you obviously off camera and in certain situations where my personality, you know, it is what it is. And I honestly feel in my heart of hearts like that I didn't get to really get across like who I am and the crack and the fun and the silliness through exposing. So that kind of is one of my like major disappointments, like, is that people really didn't get to know me on the show, whether it was, you know, my own insecurities of being in studio, me not being comfortable with the things I was doing. But I just really feel like I didn't get to have the bit of banter with the people like I would have had liked to, you know.
Yeah, and but we were just talking before we came on air about your life being, you know, a series of chapters, and you never know what the future holds. And yeah, maybe that is because I knew you off screen and I got to know who you really were.
Yeah.
But it will be exciting to see what lies ahead, because you've had a pretty eventful life so far. And I suppose for people listening that remember you and watched you and followed you when you were here, how did you end up in Hawaii?
There's these mad yokes called planes, Georgie, right? they're wings. They have terrible food. Some of them.
This is a serious podcast, Peter.
Sorry. I absolutely fell in love with Hawaii. I went on a J-1 visa with a bunch of rambunctious lads. I have a degree in government and public policy from UCC. And I went on my J-1, obviously, with a group of lads over to Maui. And I just became absolutely enamored with the place. I guess subconsciously it was kind of always calling me back to live there. It's very similar to Ireland, only they get sun, obviously. But, you know, it's island life, you know, God-fearing people. They love the crack, like they love the dancing, the arts and whatnot. And I love the sun, so it was a perfect matrimony. And I was there in 2005. And then when everything happened with Expose, obviously I got let go. And it was just, I was embarrassed, like, you know what I mean? I don't have anything else to say, really. Like, I was in LA, I had done it all. Like, I'm an Emmy-nominated entertainment news producer, you know. I had broken into America. I had done all this. And it was embarrassing for me, like, not to excel in Ireland, in my home nation, which I thought would be a lot more accepting of me and automatically, like, you're Irish, you're great, you're going to be brilliant. And you know what? It's life. Like, things don't pan out, like, sometimes the way that you think they're going to pan out. And it was a real awakening for me. And Maui was the only other place outside of Ballincollig, shout out to County Cork, that I felt like I could kind of regroup and kind of reconnect with who I actually am as a person.
How long, or have you reached the point where you're like, that happened for a reason, or I'm so glad that happened, that you were let go from?
Absolutely. Like, so here's the thing, like, I was desperately, like, unhappy in Ireland, like, you know, and that's the thing with social media. You can put out whatever you want, like, so people are only digesting what you're feeding them. And, you know, I wasn't honest, like, I wasn't honest with myself. And I just wasn't honest with the situation, really. And I don't know how to describe it. Like, it was just very disappointing for me. And I just felt lost, really, from a work point of view, from a spiritual point of view, just in all aspects of my life. You know, I had been running kind of on high octane for such a long time that I really had forgotten, like, who I was.
Wow. Yeah, and it so easily can happen, especially when you're in the public eye, and then maybe you feel like you've just been discarded and you're like, I changed my whole life for this. My family are here, you know?
Yeah, well, this is it. Like, you know, the courting and whatnot. And like, I'm not a negative person, and by no means do I want to come in here and speak negative on anyone, you know? But I am a realist, like, and I have candor. It'd be like if you were a presenter for Sky Sports, right, predominantly with soccer, and you were told, listen, you're going to come to Ireland and you're going to cover the FAI. That's predominantly your job, right? And then you move to Ireland for that job, and once a month you cover the FAI, but every other single day of the week you're doing badminton and table tennis and women's water polo. Okay, I guess this is the where I'm at, and I just have to kind of plod along and kind of deal with it, you know.
So when you then decided in your heart and soul you wanted to go back to Hawaii and start again, were you able to breathe over there, or what were you like when you arrived?
I think I just had, you know, when I was let go, you know, I was struggling to find an out, not only to find an out, but finding out into what, like, you know, I had devoted my life to entertainment, my adult life. So I had failed miserably with Expose and Virgin. So here, my rationale was like, listen, nobody's going to give me a job like off the back of Expose, like what they saw, you know what I mean? So I had a couple offers in LA, but it's like, I really didn't want to get back into that rat race. So when I got to Maui, it was just such a sigh of relief and a release of pressure and having to like, feel like I needed to be pigeonholed into this entertainment career. So it was just really refreshing. And I'll tell you what, I drove Uber, like, I love to work, and I love people. You know this about me. Like, I love chatting with people, the art of conversation. And I went driving Uber, like, I absolutely loved it. Coincidentally, now I own three companies, but I landed on my feet. But, you know, I'm no stranger to hard work, Georgie, and I'm no stranger to doing absolutely anything. I don't mind at all. Like, and I'm not motivated by money in any way, shape, or form. Like, if it satisfies my soul and I enjoy doing it and it gets me out of bed, I'll do it till they put me in a grave, you know?
Wow. That must have taught you so much about who you were underneath all the masks.
Yeah, you're forced to look really kind of deep inside yourself and take a long, hard look at what's important to you and why are we doing this? Like, and what's the gain and what's the benefit? And, you know, when you really kind of deconstruct, I think, yourself is when you really kind of start shining light on the areas that you don't necessarily like kind of looking at under a microscope, but they're the most positive and the most evolving, I think, for us as human beings. You know, the sweet isn't so sweet without the sour, like.
Yeah, God, that is so honest. And geez, what a journey. So you then founded your companies.
I ended up working for a catamaran company. Like, I'll give you the kind of brief synopsis of it, like with one of my best friends here. The owner got fired. It was just mismanagement. He got brought in as an owner. And then I got brought in kind of, we'll say, a year afterwards as a partner in the company. And then we kind of have ownership, part ownership in a wonderful restaurant. And then we have a surf school and a scuba school as well. And, you know, I found an amazing mentor over here, an angel, really, like, came into my life, a man by the name of Duke, and yeah, really just kind of set me up for the back half of my life, I would say. Also, my good friend Phil, you know, who I met out here, my business partner. Yeah, it just, everything aligned when I didn't think I had anything left.
That really teaches you to trust.
It does, you know, you have to trust the process. I think the most important thing, like, is manifesting. And it was something that I did when I moved to LA quite heavily. Just a process. I'd wake up every day. I'd look in the mirror. You know, I can, I am, I will. I say it to my kids every day, you know, when they struggle with soccer or basketball. I say, look, I can, I am, I will. You could do this. Get out there and do it. Like, you know, and I lost sight of it, like, for a long time. When I achieved what I wanted, when I got the entertainment stuff, like, I was like, all right, there we, I have it now. Like, so I don't need to do that anymore. Like, you know, leave it in the dust. But it's such a powerful tool, mantras, self-affirmation, and really putting out the frequency of what you want in the universe, you know? So it's all about frequencies. Like, I'm a firm, firm believer in it. Like, and I really believe you can achieve anything you want in this life if you put your mind to it and you just dedicate and stay strong. It'll come for you eventually. Like, you know, it really is a marathon with life. And, you know, we get so discouraged and things happen that knock us back. But one door closes, like, certainly another five will open for you. And if you keep that perception and if you keep that honesty and belief, like, it really will happen for you. You know, I've been knocked down multiple times, like, and come back, you know. And now, as I'm 40, like, I can safely say, like, with my hand on heart, that I'm absolutely where I'm supposed to be. And I'm absolutely the person who I am supposed to be. And I love the person that I am. You know, and it's taken a long, long time to say that to myself and appreciate myself, you know, because I've been outwardly focused, like, for nearly two decades. You know, I've been people pleasing. And, you know, when you're outwardly focused and you're always giving, you just lose sight of yourself, like,
Yeah, this is 40.
This is 40. Here we are, yeah.
So we touched on it at the start that I heard you on RT Radio 1, and it's not like you had slipped out of my world, I suppose. I'd always kept up with what you were doing. I always watch your Instagram stories, and I love to see your life over there. But can you take us back to last summer? And obviously, I'm so aware that this is your life and not a story for my podcast. And I want to be so sensitive about it, because I know that for a lot of people, you know, people will flippantly ask them about what happened last summer, and it's like their lives were ruined. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it, obviously August 8th was when everything happened, and I was out of town when it happened. I was on, it was my girlfriend's sister's baby shower in Kenosha, Wisconsin. So we flew out to Wisconsin to see the baby and whatnot, and we were flying back on the day that the fire happened. So kind of track back a little bit. I'm in bed with Joe, and I got a phone call at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was my children's mother, like hysterically screaming, and the kids screaming, like, everything's gone, the house is gone, like we're out of there. And you know, when you're woken up out of dead sleep, you know, you're trying to piece together what's actually happening. Am I dreaming? Is this real life? And she said, yeah, there's an awful fire. Now, I knew that there was really bad conditions because I'm in the boating industry. We own commercial catamarans. So the boats themselves had kind of been on storm watch. So what that means is people sleep on the boats so that the moorings are sound, basically. But, you know, nobody could have ever imagined that there would be a fire that would catch with the velocity of the wind as well. So I was informed of the catastrophe, like late night. It was early in the morning. So then naturally I'm awake and stressed out of my mind after I get the phone call. So I, you know, I couldn't get back to sleep. So I said, Joe, let's just go to the airport right now, like, and just wait. So we went to the airport, got into Denver, and then they grounded all the flights. Like, I couldn't get home. Like, so my house is burning, my car is burning, my life is literally melting before my eyes, and I'm sitting in an airport, like, and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, not to mention my dog is at home. I have jewelry, I have artwork. I'm big into sports memorabilia. So I have like a card collection, you know. I'm a huge Liverpool fan. So I had signed jerseys, passports, and paperwork. And I'm just kind of, I was all out of it, really. I just didn't think it was real life, to be honest. I was pinching myself. I just couldn't. And I'm sitting watching the TV with Joe, and we're literally watching Lahaina burn, and, you know, Instagram stories of the whole town going up in flames, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. Like, we have to go back to a hotel, and hopefully we can leave tomorrow, maybe not. Like, you know, we had no information on anything. And then I had gotten a call from my landlord to say that my roof had come off earlier in the day. So all of my belongings were probably everywhere. My dog was in the house. I had a dog sitter. So he's in his cage, and I'm thinking, is my dog dead? Like, so I have to call him to get my dog. So he goes, though, the funniest thing ever actually is he saved the dog. So we have a 2013 Toyota Sienna, which is our company vehicle. So he drove that. I have a 2020 Range Rover sitting right outside my house, which the keys are inside the house. So he went in, saved the dog, saved the Nintendo Switch, but left the Range Rover, which is now dust.
Oh my God, Peter. And like, I know that you can make a joke all these months later about that. So where were your kids at this point? Like, when you were in the airport, did you know, could you still talk to them, or was the service down?
Yeah, so the kids got out. Their mom and their grandmother got them out quite early, and they went to the other side of the island. So thank God, like, they didn't really get to see the heaviness of it, the brunt of it, really, which is amazing, because, you know, the trauma that can leave on a child's mind, an adult's mind, anyone's mind, but in particular, like, a fragile mind of a child, is devastating, you know. So, the other thing for me was, you know, I was divorced, right? So I'm in this interim housing that I'm in, which I rented. It's like just, you know, a one bedroom place, in the hopes of me kind of moving on to a bigger place or buying something. So I didn't get renter's insurance. Like, you know, I'm like, renter's insurance, who gets that? So I had no insurance, you know. I lost everything, like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stuff. Like, there's no recourse. Like, it was just like, all right, well, That's it.
And that's it.
I went back to scour the remains and the debris, and there's like nothing, you know. There's just nothing. Like, it's just, yeah.
So that day, then you're in the airport. You're obviously, how can you exist in an airport when that's happening?
I don't think I was physically I was there, but in every other facet, I was like gone. You know, I just, again, like, I just, you pinch yourself. Like, it's just not, it's not even real. You know, you're kind of like, is this actually happening? Like, is this like real life? Like, you just want to wake up, you know? And it's just being powerless and not being able to kind of like be there with your community. But why would you want to be there? Because there's nothing you can do. Like, everyone's suffering. You know, it's like, you know, my mom always says, like, she's like, in one sense, I'm glad you weren't there, like, because you're the fool who jump into a car and go and save someone. And then I'm the one who'll be left without a son. You know what I mean? So I believe everything happens for a reason. Like, and there's a reason that that trip was on, and there's a reason I wasn't there. Like, I don't know what it is, like, but I firmly believe that the big man upstairs, like, is always looking out for me, you know. And I'm a very spiritual person. Like, I do believe in God, like, and I do believe in my religion, like, no matter what anyone says, and I'll always be that way. And that was something that was like bred into me, like, by my family, you know.
So how did you get home then?
So the following day we went to the airport again, and there was a FEMA plane, which is the federal assistance from the government, and they let us jump onto the FEMA plane, which had all supplies and whatnot that was flying out to Maui. And we got on the plane, like, and the minute we landed, Joe and I went and grabbed the kids. I'd nowhere to live, like. So my business partner was actually in Italy at the time. So he's like, go to my house with my parents, like, and stay there. So luckily for us, like, they're my extended family. So Paula and Chris took us in and took the kids in. And it was just like, it was nuts, like, to be in someone else's house and then all this catastrophe happening, and then the emotional things happening as well, and you're trying to keep it together for your children, you're in somebody else's house, you're feeling like an imposition, even though you're absolutely not, like, you don't have your own space, you don't even know how to process this, you know what I mean, let alone be in someone else's space, someone else's household, and like process it. Not to mention the fact that we have 40 employees, a lot of which actually lost their house as well, and they're looking to people like myself and Phil, who are the owners, for comfort and solace. Yet I'm also kind of going through it, you know. So for a long period, like, I really just buried everything, and I just put on a brave face and just put on my leadership hat and just tried to do the best I could for everybody, you know, without really kind of thinking about myself and putting myself first, which is probably a really, really silly thing to do, you know, when you go through such an emotional drain and such an emotional kind of discharge, and something so catastrophic, you know. You should, I feel like, fix yourself first before you kind of go out there and put yourself forward for other people for comfort.
A big thanks to Yaplait Gear for supporting the Good Glow this season. I love quality ingredients when it comes to my food. A lot of you will know I am most happy in the kitchen coming up with new recipes. So how did I use Gear this week? Well, with the brighter days, I am looking forward to salad season. Now, I would be guilty of buying a supermarket salad, but this year, I'm making a big effort to go DIY, especially with my dressings. So this week, I used Skyr to make a Caesar dressing. Really easy to whip up and so fresh and tasty. Why not try it this week? Head over to goodglow.ie for this week's recipe. And don't forget, you can pick up an 850-gram tub of Skyr Natural in Aldi. Because I was saying to you, you know, when we were speaking during the week, that you're kind of the type of person, I think, that would go into action mode, and you wouldn't freeze. Exactly like what your mum said, that you were protected by not being there, because who knows what you would have done. So in those following days, I can imagine that you can't sit still.
Oh yeah, I mean action mode straight away. What can we do? How can we get into Lahaina? So the second day that I was back, I went to Costco with my team. We bought thousands of dollars worth of supplies and foods. We were the first people in with fuel. We were using the boats to get Kapuna, everyone's relations out of there, getting supplies back in, and that continued for 4 or 5 days. We were just like community centric, focused on what can we do for our community. How can we help? Like, these are all people that we know, like, and we might not know them personally, but you know, you walk through Lahaina town, you recognize everyone, you say hello to everyone, you know. And like I say, you might know them personally, but you certainly have had like a dalliance with them, or you certainly have had an interaction at the coffee shop or a hello. So you know, you just feel obligated, like, you know, in a powerless moment, just to kick into action. Like, there is nothing else really for me anyway. Personally, I was like, I can't sit around on my hands and knees. I need to get out and get in there and get on the ground and just do everything humanly possible that I can for, you know, not only the people of Lahaina, but like the people, my team, like, and my people that work with us who are suffering.
And how emotional were those few days?
Crazy. So crazy. Such an amazing bonding experience though, you know, in sadness, like in disarray. The rallying of everybody, and how the community was the one actually that took action, because we didn't get anything from the federal government for days. They didn't show up for it. Was us take care of it or people perish further. So that was the one amazing thing, where there was no divide between anybody, your color, your creed, anything. It was just like, you're from Lahaina, give me your hands, you know, you do more with these than you do with these, you know what I mean? Like, so that was the goal, like, really, from the minute we hit the turf, was like, let's just kick into overdrive and let's call our contacts and call our connections, and how can we shine a light on this? Like, because as you know, the media is a cycle. Like, this is our life, and this is such a marathon, and an entire town being decimated, like, that needs to be rebuilt. So this is still ongoing and will be ongoing for probably a decade for us and the people of Lahaina. So I just felt like that was the only option, really. There was no other option.
That was such an important moment on the podcast there, but just obviously people couldn't see. But when you said you can do more with these than these, you held up your hands and then pointed. So as in, you weren't pointing fingers at that point.
No, not at all. Nothing gets done when you point the fingers. Like, nothing gets done, you know? And like I say, we didn't get any help immediately. So there was no option. It was us with the relief efforts and other community members, you know?
And were you saving lives?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't personally, but I can tell that the team was there on the front lines when it was happening. And, you know, the stories are horrendous, like, of what these people witnessed and what they had to go through, which will live with them forever. You know, the images and like catastrophic things, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but, you know, people were incinerated, vehicles were incinerated, and this is happening in cars. The people were in the cars, the people were inside their houses, and there was no warnings. Like, the sirens never went off, the water was turned off. So,
oh my God.
It was just a nightmare. It was a nightmare situation. Like, and the kids were all off school. So you have all these grandparents that are at home watching kids, because the parents are out working, obviously, to make ends meet. You know, Hawaii is extremely expensive. So a lot of families have to work kind of 2 and 3 jobs in order to, you know, maintain a decent kind of level of living over here. So, you know, you have elderly that are taking naps, that are watching kids, and then the blaze just came and there's no warning. You know, the house took, they're all old houses as well. So it was just all of the conditions really that were involved with the catastrophe were just built for disaster. Like,
and then you have the world's media watching on, wanting like in inverted commas, a story.
They want news stories and stuff. And that's why I was so reluctant to do any media, really. I didn't do any media on it because I wasn't in a frame of mind to do it, first and foremost. Like, and I didn't want to be clickbait, you know, and I didn't want to be like, I didn't want my words being taken out of context, and I certainly didn't want like headlines coming out and been splashed on like rags and stuff, because it's just a disservice like to people and a community, you know. And I'm well able for putting my foot in my mouth, as you know, and as Beyonce Knowles knows, but like there's a time and a place for it, you know what I mean? But when you're dealing with really sensitive things, like you have to be very sensitive.
Yeah, and you also, you don't want to speak on behalf of your community either, I presume, in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I'm not Hawaiian, like, and I'm not a local person, yeah, like, but there's a lot of plights the Hawaiian people have that are very similar to Irish people. So, you know, I do affirm with Hawaiian people and with the people of this island and, you know, through history, like what has happened to them, you know what I mean? And this is like catastrophic, not only to an island, but to a Hawaiian nation, you know? But you have like Hawaiian people that are already dwindling, and then you have something like this happening, which is just really catastrophic, you know, to history and to the future of Hawaiian people.
Yeah. And that's what you don't think about. So you're in your friend's parents' house, and there is no plan at this point.
No, there's nothing. So like the boats are okay. The companies are okay. And I like, there's no plan. I don't know when we're going to reopen. We don't know when the roads are opening. Like we have no information whatsoever. Like everything is at an absolute, standstill, for the island. Yeah, there's nothing. It's complete ambiguity. You know, you're just kind of like stripped to your basic human needs, which is just, you know, having someone and people around you that are kind and compassionate and loving and caring and can empathize with you, you know what I mean? And really just relate with kind of what you're going through, which, you know, is so kind of insular, really, and like out of this world to experience.
Is it still like that, Peter, or what has happened since?
Well, now we're just waiting, you know, because there's permitting, they're clearing the debris, like there's a plan to rebuild the entire town, but it's going to take a lot of time. There's obviously pushback because Lahaina was the epicenter of the Hawaiian kingdom. So it's where all the royals actually lived. So it's a very, very spiritual, sacred place. And as you could imagine, there's a lot of prime real estate there. So there's developers that are just chomping at the bit to get in there and really kind of modernize Hawaii, modernize Maui, which really will just take away from the magic, like in the je ne sais quoi and the aloha of the place and the island, which is the magic that brought people there in the first place, you know. But, you know, we live in a very capitalistic society, unfortunately, and if there's a dollar to be made, then people don't give a damn where or how they're going to make that dollar.
Wow. So like, put it into context for us, is the whole town gone?
The whole town is gone. I would say, I'm trying to put it, how many miles? It's probably, I want to say probably like 10 miles. Like everything is gone. So the complete front street, which was the main kind of promenade or area of Lahaina, is gone. Like all the commercial buildings, there's a lot of cultures and there's a lot of ethnicities and races and whatnot live in Lahaina, which is what makes it such a beautiful place. You know, so many Micronesians, Polynesians, Hawaiians, you know, Europeans, South Americans, like everyone. It's such an amazing place. But at the same time, like they're all multi-generational families as well. So you have kind of five or six families, you know, that are living in a house. So it's not uncommon practice for, you know, great granda and great grandma or grandma and granddad to be raising children while the mom and dad are at work, you know. So like all those houses, when they were built, as you can imagine, the permitting probably wasn't to code as they're building on kind of like these granny flats. So when they go to rebuild their houses, they're going to be stopped because it's not to code, and the coding is changing now and becoming more legitimate where it wasn't before, which is going to grossly impede the people who have been living there as far as rebuilding their lives and their structures.
Oh, and that will like affect generations to come. Dan Buettner, when he talks about longevity and the importance of grandparents being around the younger kids and living together and if that cycle is broken, like, what is the future there?
It's mad. I mean, we're already after seeing unparalleled numbers of emigration from Lahaina, naturally, since it happened. People are just leaving the island. You know, we don't have enough people to work industry, because you got to remember, all these multi-generational families are the ones that are running the hotels and are running the resorts. So if you don't have people to work these resorts and staff them, then the tourist industry is dead. There is nothing.
What does your business look like now?
I mean, we're very lucky insofar as, you know, we created something really, really strong, and, you know, we pride ourselves on it, you know what I mean? And we pride ourselves on integrity, and we, like I say, we created something really incredible. Our companies were shut down for the best part of 5 months. There was no revenue, no money, nothing coming in. You know, we lost, I think, you know, you're watching the bank account, like I was watching it just dwindle, because we're refunding all these future trips and whatnot. I think it was about $700,000, like, we lost in 4 months. And it's just, it's hard to physically watch something like that. You know what I mean? Not that it trumps anything that has happened, but just from a commerce perspective, obviously, and living and the thing that is the bread and butter that feeds all of the staff, myself included, you know, it's a really frightening thing to be like, oh, well, I just got shafted from Expose. I just rebuilt my life here now. And please, Jesus, don't ruin this as well for me. I need this.
Oh, Peter, that's so tough for you. And excuse my ignorance. So did you move the boats to somewhere where you can...
So the boats are actually out of the resort area. So they're totally fine, and they're kind of moored off the resort area. So, you know, we have seen a significant downturn, though, obviously, with the tourism industry.
Yes.
You know, people are very reluctant, obviously, to come here out of respect, you know, which is a fantastic thing. You know, they're very respectful when they do come here as well, and mindful that, you know, this is people's lives.
So you live obviously somewhere completely different now, as you said, up in the mountains.
Yeah, so I live on the other side of the island. There's a volcano here called Haleakala. So I live kind of up the side of the volcano. I'm up at about 8,000 feet, up in a place called Kula. So it's gorgeous. I'm surrounded by goats and sheep and all that stuff. So,
oh, well, you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah.
It's so mad to think that, like, we're sitting here having this conversation and that's where you are, like, on the other side of the world. It's like we're sitting in the same room.
I know, it's mental. Like, it is mad. Like, I say the same thing. The only thing that's a balls, like, is the time difference. Just like, just call me in the morning or call me at night. I'll be in the morning. Yeah. You'll be in the night. One of them. I don't know. Just call.
Yeah, 10-hour time difference. Was there ever a thought in your mind that you might leave?
I definitely thought about it, but, you know, my kids are here and the businesses are here. I've built everything. So, you know, I'm indebted, I feel like, to Lahaina and, you know, obviously to my children, at least till they're 18 anyway. I'm devastated. Like, I am absolutely devastated with the loss, obviously, of the town. But, you know, I'm under no illusion that it will be rebuilt. I don't know what standard or what level it will be rebuilt to, but I can tell you, I will not be settling, I don't think, or I won't be living on the west side of Maui after what happened. I think from just an emotional standpoint and a mental standpoint, I can't do it.
I totally can see why that would be. Like, not that you needed to learn any more lessons in your life, but, like, what has this taught you about yourself over the last?
I would say it has taught me that the light will always trump the dark. No matter what situation you're in, no matter how dark it is, there's always going to be light, and the light will always shine on that darkness and eclipse it. Like, always, no matter how bad things get, you're always going to wake up hopefully the next day and you have a fresh opportunity to kind of seize the day.
And is manifestation and all of those things still a huge part of your life?
Not as much as I'd like it to be, you know. Like I say, it's such a messed up thing, right? It's such an effective thing, so simplistic, but we're so bloody lazy as human beings well, I'm only speaking for myself, obviously. I'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll double up on the mantra tomorrow. I'll skip it today kind of thing, you know? Yeah, I'll do twice as much tomorrow, looking at myself in the mirror. Never needed an excuse, obviously. I'll double up my mirror time. Perfect. But I would, yeah, I would. And it's something that I try to like instill in my children as well, as just positive, positive, positive. You know what I mean? You are what you eat, like. And if you walk around all day with your head down being miserable, like, you know, you're inviting misery in to join you. But if you get out there, you'd be surprised. Even when the negative things happen, just kind of take it on the chin and go, all right, that's life. Something great's around the corner. You'd be surprised like how quickly it'll come.
I'd say you've cheered up a few people's days over the last few months. Like, I'd say your energy has been incredible for your community.
Well, I try to always be kind of happy-go-lucky and positive, you know what I mean? That's always kind of been my strength, really, is kind of lightening up the mood in certain situations. But I would say they have been more of an influence on me than I have been on them, you know, like including my partner, who's just been, you know, the light of my life, really, to be honest, you know.
Oh, amazing. So, okay, I'm going to leave it at that. But will you stop being such a stranger to us here in Ireland?
Know,
like,
we miss you
and you need to... I think you should start a podcast. Just what the world needs.
Well, Georgie, they didn't even feckin' look at me VHS tape I'd sent in for the bloody gig at the Late Late Show, so that'll tell you.
Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
I knew that there would be an appropriate time to ask you to catch up with me, and thank you for sharing so beautifully today. And I'm glad this day has come.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to tell you as well how absolutely proud of you I am and how far you've come and your success. I wish you nothing but the best. But I mean, you don't need my well wishes. You seem to be well on your way, girl.
No, I feel the same about you.
Well, I appreciate you. Slán go fóill now.
A huge thank you to Peter for being such an incredible guest on The Good Glow. And make sure, if you enjoyed that, to maybe reach out, send him a little message, because he really did wear his heart on his sleeve during that episode. And thank you to you for tuning in wherever you are in the world. We're off to New York this week to run the New York Half Marathon on Paddy's Day. 180 members of Team Good Glow are about to make their way to the Big Apple. So we are so excited, and we are about to launch our Chicago Half and 5 kilometer run. It's taking place in September in Chicago. So if you want to know more about that trip, if you'd like to come along and either run the half or a 5k, I've left all the details in the episode show notes. So we'll be launching that really soon, so keep your eyes peeled, and we would love you to join Team Good Glow. I'll see you next week.